Tuesday, September 24th. Again, London has been bombed by German planes. And British planes have attacked Berlin, this time in the longest and heaviest British attack of the war on the German capital. For this reason, Berlin calls its morning attacks on London reprisal raids. Morning, Columbia calls in its correspondents in London and Berlin for latest reports on developments abroad. And afterwards, we'll hear a report from our own national capital. While we're waiting for CBS correspondent Larry Lesser to report from the British capital, here is the latest news on the Battle of Dakar, which occupies much of today's news spotlight. This strategic West African port city, only 1,500 miles east of the South American coast, has undergone a seven-hour bombardment. Its French colonial administration is defending it against an attack by combined British and three French forces under General de Gaulle. The French government at Vichy says that 100 were killed and 400 wounded during the bombardment. Afterwards, the British and Free French are said to have attempted to land 2,000 troops at Rouvet, 25 miles from Dakar. But Vichy says this was repulsed. And another Vichy report asserts that the French government has secretly ordered resistance to the utmost and has called in all its land, air, and sea forces to fight the British. General Rigond, recovering in Vichy from injuries received in an airplane accident, is directing the fight from that city. Now the news from London, reported by Larry Lesser. Go ahead, London.
This is London. The air raid sirens have sounded for the second time since daylight this morning, and the great air battle is on again over the coasts of this island. Yesterday, Britain wrote off 11 of its fighters after knocking down 11 German aircraft. And this damage to its own air force is by no means in the proportion by which the British hope to maintain its superiority in daylight fighting over the masses of German planes. Therefore, it's beginning to look as though this almost continuous battle in the air ranks as one of the most decisive battles of the ages, as important to the future of Europe as Waterloo or the Battle of the Marne. If the British fighter command breaks first, there will be almost no protection on this island against the bombers employed by Germany, just as there was no protection for Allied troops in Norway. The tide of battle cannot be judged yet, but it must be remembered that in order to win this battle, Britain's fighters must shoot down a proportion of almost three German planes to every one the RAF loses. We have no late news here of the sea battle, which was being waged off the West African coast, but a communique from General de Gaulle is expected at any moment. There are two versions here regarding the strength of the British squadron which took part. A message from Vichy says that the British fleet there consists of an aircraft carrier and several cruisers. Another report here says the strength of the British squadron consists of two battleships, four cruisers, and six auxiliary cruisers, and a number of destroyers. It's still a question here whether the British ships were on their way to Dakar before or after the French ships passed through the Straits of Gibraltar. It appears as though General de Gaulle submitted a plan for transporting to Dakar the French division which had been assembled and re-equipped in Britain. His plan was accepted by the British government. The convoy of troop ships was escorted by units of the Free French Navy and ships of the British fleet. Word of this movement apparently reached the Vichy government. This was responsible, probably, for the decision to dispatch units of the French Navy from Toulon to Dakar, and six French warships passed through the Straits of Gibraltar. As Britain was not at war with the French, they were allowed to pass through the Straits. Now it is a question, who has the greater number of warships at Dakar, the French or the British? It's possible that the British may have reinforced their squadron, if indeed General de Gaulle was on his way before the French ships passed through Gibraltar. We know here that General de Gaulle's expedition was organized under conditions of extraordinary secrecy. Special boats were prepared for it. The assembly of three French troops was carried out at hidden points. Very few people had any hint when the expedition left this country. Dakar, as you know, was the third port of the French Empire, and it was a German air base for its Atlantic air service to Brazil. It's about 12 hours flying time away from South America. Last night was the 17th successive night of bombing in London. The communique says this morning that during the night, enemy aircraft made bombing attacks on London and several places in southeast England. A few bombs were dropped in other parts of the country, but London, again, was the enemy's main objective. The attacks were again scattered over many parts of the London area. Last night, it seemed to many of us here that there were more German planes than usual overhead. The anti-aircraft defenses were aided by searchlights. and were very active. From a rooftop, it appears that the defenses allowed the German planes to buzz along in their course for several minutes. Then they'd suddenly catch them in a net of searchlights and let fly. The shrapnel burst would explode at the very focal point of the cobweb of searchlights. One German bomber was shot down here before dawn. It was the longest raid in a long time last night. But this morning the headlines read, Berlin's biggest raid, heavily bombed for 4 hours last night. And in the evening news, RAF bombed Berlin for 4 hours, waves of plane and severest raid. Well, maybe the bombing of London isn't such news anymore. After all, it's been going into the third week now. We're returning now to CBS in New York.
That was Larry Lucere reporting from London. Here's the latest news from the Far East. French colonial troops still are fighting a battle with an invading Japanese force in northern Indochina. Dispatches from Hanoi, capital of the French colony, and from Shanghai indicate that casualties have been heavy. The French force is said to be making a determined stand at Langson, a railroad city, after abandoning a blockhouse at Dung Dang. Now the news from the German capital, reported by Columbia's correspondent in Berlin. Go ahead, Berlin.
It is now London versus Berlin. And it looks as if the combatants are going to engage in some free-for-all slugging. The raid last night started before midnight and kept Berliners out of their beds for a period just 8 minutes short of 4 hours. And virtually without interruption, the anti-aircraft batteries in Berlin, as well as the searchlight crews, were in continuous action. There were some dramatic highlights in the raid for me. The British planes, either singly or in small formation, judging from the sound of their motors, which we could plainly hear, never seemed to stop coming. I saw five searchlights pick up one British plane. In the sky, in its immediate area, was alive with exploding anti-aircraft shells. I had my field glasses trained on it. The plane was diving, twisting, and trying every sort of maneuver to escape the searchlights, but they hung on tenaciously. For almost a half a minute, I followed the course of the British plane, still unhit, until the searchlights and ship disappeared below the horizon. I wonder whether it escaped. We have an unconfirmed report that one British bomber was shot down. The striking thing to one on the ground was the absolute reckless flying tactics of the attacking planes. They came diving in at low altitudes. It seemed at times as though they were not more than 1,000 feet over my head. They roared down into the face of the barrage of flak artillery and then off again. We could hear the sound of bombs exploding amidst the bellow of defense guns. There was a lot of fireworks caused by numerous British flares, the bursting of anti-aircraft shells, and the thousands of tracer bullets which raced up in search of the British planes. As for the damage done, I have nothing but the official communique. It tells us, quote, in spite of violent anti-aircraft fire, a few British bombers succeeded in reaching the north and eastern suburbs of Berlin and dropped a number of bombs. The positions of the bombs, far away from all military or industrial objectives, provides fresh evidence for the fact that the British airmen deliberately attacked the residential quarters. Some damage was done to dwelling houses, and several civilians were killed or injured. There was no damage of military importance. Well, that is the official communique about last night's raid. The noon papers also pick up the cudgels and accuse the British of, quote, deliberate attacks on orders of Churchill against women and children and residential quarters, end of quote. The Bates and Mittag states, quote, so it was repeated again last night when the bombs, which dropped like hail, only caused damage to apartment houses. The sole objective of the British was to attack the civilian population and to murder our comrades, which will not be forgotten, end of quote. Then another paper, the Swarfer Blatt, states that Churchill has sentenced himself to death, and so has England, by these night raids. The usual post-raid inspection trip for foreign correspondents under the escort of officials from the propaganda ministry did not take place last night. When the firing was at its heaviest, I decided to look for the air raid shelter in my hotel. And there I found Serrano Suñé, the Spanish Minister of the Interior, and his suite. Señor Suñé, the brother-in-law of General Franco, arrived in Berlin last evening to confer with Herr von Ribbentrop regarding the plans of the Axis powers for future operations in the Mediterranean and North Africa. The Spanish official will meet the foreign minister today. Herr von Ribbentrop returned from Rome last evening. The Schwarzer Blatt has an article discussing, quote, the fortress of London, unquote, in which there is a statement that, quote, There are so many military objectives in London itself that it is doubtful how its civilian status can be measured. And continuing, the paper writes that all opticians and mechanics in London are now engaged in military work for the British government. And so, quote, one could say that besides the homes of the plutocrats, there is no house left in London that theoretically or practically could not be considered a military objective. There's not one single man in the shadow industry who has been evacuated. Not one single plant of the shadow war industry that has been shifted from London. This is Edwin Hartridge. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
Such is the news from York. Now the news from our own national capital, reported by Albert Warner. We take you now to Washington.
An economic boycott of Japan is proposed for consideration today by the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Representative Sal Bloom. His proposal fits into the sentiments, if not the definite plan, of the State Department. Not since the Panay incident, in which a Japanese airplane bombed and sank an American gunboat on the Yangtze River in China, has antagonism reached such a height in official circles here. With the grabbing of airplane and army bases in French Indochina, the worst fears of American advisers on the Far East are confirmed. Even those few who have believed the controlling military group in Tokyo would at length become satiated, even these are agreeing now that a deliberate march on the Dutch East Indies is underway. So comes at least consideration of an embargo and of an open announcement that America will use the British naval base at Singapore in the Far East. There are some here, by the way, who wonder why the French government at Vichy throws up its hands and tells Japan to go ahead and march into French Indochina and then becomes so outraged when British and free French try to take Dakar and the French colony there on the African coast. It is time, said Congressman Bloom, for us to consider a prohibition on our exports to Japan and also on Japanese imports. If we stop using silk stockings, Japan is going to feel the economic pressure. Mr. Bloom added that if there was to be any embargo on shipments to Japan, oil should be included. Some might say it would drive the Japanese to action against the Dutch East Indies to obtain oil there. But she's going to do it anyhow, said Bloom. He argued that an embargo and boycott would not mean war. He thought it would serve this notice on Japan. Unless you live up to your promises and have some regard for treaties, we don't want anything to do with you. Once it looked as if the Democratic leadership of Congress was trying to drive toward adjournment by the end of this week. It doesn't look that way any longer. In fact, it doesn't look as if there were going to be any adjournment at all. There has been some vote counting in private. The majority leaders of the House ran into a surprise. They found it quite likely that they did not have the votes to adjourn. On top of the solid Republican opposition, they encountered a substantial number of Democrats who felt they could not record themselves in favor of ending the session while the world emergency continued. Now, many of these congressmen, Republicans and Democrats, are actually raring to go home. They should be campaigning. There's an election ahead. But they are afraid that an adjournment vote might possibly be worse than a skimpy campaign. It's possible that Speaker Rabin may insist that if congressmen don't want to adjourn, they should not have the aid of a long recess, but should stay on the job with short, three-day recesses in between work. One congressional leader thought the last straw had been reached when he heard that a representative who had already gone home to campaign had wired back to the Capitol saying, "In my absence, pair my vote against adjournment." Privately, there are groans from congressmen at the idea of a recess instead of adjournment. There's no travel expense money provided by the government unless it's an adjournment. For our public men, it seems, these are self-sacrificial days. We return you now to New York.
And with this news from our nation's capital, Columbia concludes this morning report of national and international developments, which comes to you each morning at this time, and each evening at 6:45 Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Larry Lasseur reported from London, Edwin Hartridge reported from Berlin, and Albert Warner from Washington. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.